What's up, everybody? We are back again with another episode of Octagon Control. As usual, I am your host, Nikolai Gianti, staff writer for the Maximum Fighting Championships. And these are my views, not theirs. Alongside me, as always, Chris Manning. Chris Manning is his title.
And I'm also a writer for Vector Magazine. If you're in Athens, pick one up.
Yes.
It's out.
Please do that. We are reporting you after a very interesting UFC 167, to say the least.
Interesting doesn't even begin to explain.
And I'm sure at some point I'm going to end up going on a rant. But GSP retains the belt. Robbie Lawler takes the biggest leap out of anyone other than maybe Tyron Woodley. And that's, he definitely took a bigger one than Tyron Woodley. Rashad Evans looks like he is back in business. And, of course, we already know who Chael's booked against again, so.
Yeah, and I don't think you can even underscore the fact of how Robbie Lawler, makes really probably one of the, unless you're out of favor, submits Michael McDonald and just destroys him next month. He goes 4-0 in 2013. Robbie Lawler, in any way you look at it, to me, is the comeback fighter of the year. He beats Josh Koscheck in a fight I thought he was going to lose. I think you did as well. He looks really good. And, he does the predictable thing and just obliterates Roger Bowling on a Fox card.
Roger Bowling.
Was it Roger Bowling?
No.
Who was it?
Bobby Volker.
Okay, so, my bad. They're the same guy. They fought three times in Strikeforce. There's no difference. But then, he gets booked against Rory McDonald, and at least my early thought was, well, this is Rory's, this is, like, the end, where the Robbie Lawler is going to be destined for, fight of the night bonuses and knockout and that's screw, but he's going to lose to Rory, and I'm moving anything up. But he beats Rory, and it wasn't exactly a close fight. He beats him up, he roughed him up, and he won 2 out of 3 rounds, I think, in my book.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where we're getting sort of these split decisions. I thought Robbie won 1 and 3, Rory won round 2. I think the bigger issue, as opposed to, Robbie Lawler looked very good. But Rory, his game plan just sort of made you scratch your head, at least in my opinion. Yeah, he went from this guy who could utilize his takedowns, he had the jab, and I'm just not sure what happened here. Lawler, obviously the better power puncher, but McDonald really just sort of a scratch-your-head thing here.
Yeah, just in general, a lot of, this was, I think this kind of, I think Dana White maybe overreacted a little bit in saying that Nevada, is the worst athletic commission, in the world. But they definitely have their issues. There's definitely some serious flaws. I mean, Big John McCarthy still can't ref in the state of Nevada, and that's definitely a mistake. He's still one of the best, if not the best, out there. So it's a lot not to like in Nevada right now, and I think this event really served as a highlight of that.
Yeah, and let's get to the sort of controversy that, and you know what? I'm not going to call it controversy. Controversy means there's arguments on both sides. There is no argument on the other side. We're in 2013, and it's a time where the sport's been around for 20 years. 20 years. You should have judges that know how to judge at this point. It's amazing that they don't. And, you can say GSP landed more significant strikes. Johnny Hendricks controlled the clinch game. He controlled the wrestling. He had more power. And I would argue he, other than 2 rounds, controlled the striking also. Johnny Hendricks was the all-around better fighter that day. And he had that. He fought the fight of his life. And they said, nah, this isn't you. Because we don't really know how to judge. And I guess my biggest issue is, with this fight, let's say this is the best Johnny Hendricks ever fights. Let's say he had GSP's number this night. And he took the belt. He was supposed to take the belt away. But he doesn't. And in a rematch, let's say GSP does what GSP does. and then rides off into the sunset. Johnny Hendricks will forever look at this as the thing that got away, and title shots come so few and far between that you can't have this issue in a title fight. And people that compare it to the Jones-Gustafson fight are completely wrong, in my opinion. The Jones-Gustafson fight was close. The Jones-Gustafson fight could have gone either way. There was an argument there. Not in my opinion. I scored it for Jones, and I voiced that. But this fight, I don't think you could have the argument for GSP.
You know, I've rewatched the fight, and I think there actually is an argument for George winning the fight. I still would score a 3-2 for Johnny. But, you know, just kind of, and I'm going to kind of just say the way things are scored, it's damages and one of the things included, which is probably a mistake. I mean, that is a mistake. I'm just looking at their faces. I mean, if you went to the fight, after the fight, and you looked at Johnny Hendricks and George St. Pierre, and you're going to ask who won the fight, you're going to look at Johnny Hendricks and say his face is barely touched. His hands are a little beat up, and that's it. He's fine. It's an interesting dilemma. I think the comparisons to Jones-Gustafson are actually more apt than you. I mean, I think it was, like, close. It's not like, I think one of the things that's maybe getting a little pushed a little too far is that, do I think Johnny Hendricks won the fight? Yeah. Would I probably say that right now I would consider him the best 170 pounder in the world? Yeah. But it's not like he just came out there and, like, for five rounds, like, decimated George St. Pierre. GSP had his moments. GSP maybe didn't look as strong. And I don't know. I actually don't believe that this is a prime GSP anymore. I think he's actually started on the way down in his cycle of athletic prime. But I think this fight definitely was close. I think you could make an argument for St. Pierre, but at the same time, I do think Hendricks won, and ideally we get a rematch. But as you know, that's not necessarily something we might get. We don't know yet.
And let's get to that issue. We don't know what's fully going on. We really don't know anything that's going on. Who knows? We may never know. But my issue is not with GSP retiring. My issue is saying I want to take 1 to 2 years off and come back. You don't fight a performance like that and then say that. And it's not that you owe something to the fans, or you owe something to Dana White, or you owe something to the media or us who bought it. No, you owe something to the guy that beat you. You owe something to that guy. And if you want to retire, retire, but you can't leave an opening to come back with that statement. If he was going to make his announcement that he was done, then you're done and you walk. That's what you do. You say, I'm no longer fighting. I had a good career. I made a lot of money. I'm the best welterweight ever. Ever. No one can make an argument that you're not. And you go off into the sunset. But to say, I need to take some time off. I might be out for 1 to 2 years, but I might come back. You can't do that. And I think that's the real issue here. That's the thing that gets me. Not so much that he retired, but what he said and how it was worded. And especially after a fight like that's one of those times where you keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, and the thing I'd say is that I don't think George owes anything to anybody. I think, like, would I like to see him Hendricks fight? Yeah, but he is an independent contractor when it really comes down to it. And I just want to point out that it's kind of crazy that Dana White's going to, of course, Dana White's going to freak out and say, you're not retiring. You were going to do the rematch because it's his most bankable star. And he's honestly more worried about his bottom dollar than he is GSP's problems. I mean, I'm going to assume that for George, it's got to be something that's worrisome. And they seem to get along a little bit better, and then Dana White thinks it's solvable, but of course he's going to think it is because he thinks he can throw enough money at something and then it figures itself out. George doesn't know anything to anyone, but let's say he does want to take like a year or two off, the best thing they can do is just to vacate the title, have Hendricks fight the winner,
You just want him to fight Lawler at this point.
I do, but I think you could do like a mini tournament where he fights Lawler and then the winner. Like,
but in my opinion, if you do, you have to give Hendricks a bye. Hendricks versus someone.
Okay, so then I think you'd have to do Lawler versus the winner of Condit Brown, and then you have that fight, and then you then you have to have Hendricks wait a while. Like, it's a complicated situation that I think would take some time to kind of think out. Or you maybe could just go straight to Lawler-Hendricks, put it on Fox, and then have Brown, you know, like, you do it that way and kind of build it up that way. And then, you know, in a year and a half, 2 years, you could, it'd be a really, really sellable pay-per-view to say George is making his comeback, and then he maybe fights one fight and then go straight back to the belt. You could do something like that, but I just hope we get a, I mean, I don't want to, you don't want to ever rush anyone into making a very, like, serious decision about their life, their health. I mean, fighting is a detrimental sport to the brain. I think there's, like, you can't really deny that.
No, not at all.
I mean, you can't, but let's hope we get a solution sooner rather than later, and we're not kind of left, like, out to dry for a long time, and we just don't know. Because it's not, I mean, nothing's really fair in this situation, and, like, no matter what decision ends up being made, someone's probably not going to get exactly what they want. Even if I feel like I have a seeing situation that Dana White in some way, shape, or form probably gets what he wants.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's good or bad, I'm not really sure.
However, let's sort of move on and do a little bit of a fantasy matchmaker.
Besides the obvious.
Besides the obvious, yes. Chris, I'll let you go ahead first and make a fight.
Well, my first one is I'm going to have Rashad Evans fight every single one of his Fox people he works with on the Fox UFC tonight, and that includes Kenny Florian and Dominic Cruz, by the way. But I think him and Dana Cormier actually makes, like, a lot of sense at this point. When we look at 205, Jones isn't going to fight until March or April now because of his toe. That's really perfect timing for Gustafsson, assuming he beats Jimmy Manoa, for them to do a rematch sometime next summer. And then this also is a point where Rashad looked amazing. I mean, that was the best Rashad we've seen since he throttled Tito in Philadelphia, like, almost 2 years ago. If that Rashad shows up against Dan Henderson, maybe he's the first guy to knock out Dan Henderson, and he just obliterated Chael. So I kind of think that it's the Rashad's back on his way up. It's a very sellable fight. You could have him and Cormier fight on Fox or on, like, a co-main event somewhere, and it probably would give Cormier enough time to actually get down to the weight, and then you can kind of win, lose, or draw there. You have three really good options for Jones' opponents at 205. You could have the Gustafsson rematch, which obviously would be a big seller. Cormier, which would be a big seller. Or you get the Rashad rematch, that Rashad, you know, could market as he earned it. And in either way, shape, or form, maybe if Cormier needs more time to get down to the weight, you could get a good Jones heavyweight fight and kind of just figure things out there. But ideally, I think Rashad Evans, Daniel Cormier is the way to go for both guys.
Yeah, and for me, yeah, I got to look at a guy, Tyron Woodley, just an unbelievable performance. And maybe he's not in the top 10 yet, but another guy that made a huge name for himself on the last pay-per-view, I believe, was Hector Lombard. And I wouldn't mind seeing those two throw some bombs at each other. So I'm going with that. I would give the early edge to Woodley based on the wrestling also. And definitely the reach, but it'd be a match between two very, very strong guys, and definitely a fun one.
Okay, before we go to my next one, I want to ask you, how would you feel about Jake Shields? This is Jake Shields and this is the guys I haven't talked about, Jake Shields and Lombard. How would you feel about that one? As opposed,
I think you can do it. I think it's. It's one of those ones where it's a step into the top 10, but I guess I wouldn't put Jake Shields into my top 10 either, so.
Yeah, okay. I want to ask you, what do you do with Rory? What do you do with Rory McDonald?
I think if I was them, I would drop him down to, like, when they gave him guys like Shane Mills. A bigger name than that, but along the same lines of a little better skill level, a little bigger name. I don't think you want to keep running him against top 10 guys. You know, he hasn't looked great in his last two fights. And I think part of it is you do need to get that killer instinct back.
Yeah, he's definitely has seemed very content contract. But I think the problem here is that there's actually two names that are big names that I think I would love to see him fight against now.
Carlos Condit, one of them?
Well, if Condit loses to Matt Brown, I think that would just make too much sense. Both coming off losses, you could so sell it as it's these guys' chance to get back up to the top of the heap. And you know Rory really, really wants that fight. And this one probably will never happen, but Nick Diaz would be fascinating.
Well, you know, one of the early articles I wrote was after Rory had destroyed Nate, and I questioned whether he could beat Nick, and I received a tongue-lashing from the 209. But, yes, I do like that fight. However, Nick Diaz,
I think that could play out kind of interestingly. And or you could do, I think you could do like Nate Marquardt. You could do Jordan Mean. I think there's a lot of options. My first pick would be Condit if he loses, followed by Nick Diaz. But I don't know how likely either of those are.
No, and I think another fight you have to look at, a guy that really made a name for himself after Timothy Elliott looked good against Louis Gaudinot in their earlier fight earlier this year. And Ali Bogatinov defeated Elliott, looked pretty good other than that third round where he really gassed out. I think him and John Lineker, a guy that would be having a title shot if he knew how to make weight, is a fun fight. It's a number one contender fight.
I can get behind that. And the last thing I want to ask you is, what do you do with Donald Cerrone? Because that's the Donald Cerrone that, for me, can go out there and compete with top five guys.
And here's the issue with Donald Cerrone. When he's on, he looks like the best fighter in the world. He looks like an absolute beast, and you say, man, this guy shows up every time. Yeah, he's tough to pick
what
against.
What he did to Evan Dunham is something that no one really has done to Evan Dunham.
And then what he does against Rafael Dos Anjos and Nate Diaz makes us scratch our heads. Do you give him Nurmi? I don't think so.
How about Barbosa?
I think
Barbosa, the winner of Barbosa and Castillo.
I think that's a realistic fight. So we're going to say Edson Barbosa because that's who I'm picking.
That's going to be the Anthony Pettis fight light version.
Now
it's going to get what I expect.
You could even do the Graham Maynard Nate Diaz winner if you really want.
That's not the worst. I mean, that would be a top 10. I mean, he didn't beat a guy in the top 10, but that'd be the guys where you could. I mean, he fought so many. Okay, the way like top 10 is right now, Benson's fighting Josh Thompson. TJ Grant still has concussion issues, and that leads me to think that probably him and Gill are going to be matched if they can come back in time. Pettis is out for a while now, 6 to 9 months with the PCL. Dos Anjos, I feel like him and Nurmi have to be on a collision course at this point unless they give Nurmi, like, the winner. If Nate Diaz wins, you give Nurmi Nate Diaz. Because then I think him and Manny are teammates at AKA, so they can't fight. Jim Miller, I believe he's coming off a loss, right? I want to say Jim Miller's coming off a loss.
I don't know if he's fought since the no contest against Pat Healy.
Yeah.
Or loss.
No contest. So he has a fight at UFC 168 against a non-top 10 guy. I guess you could do Cerrone, Jim Miller if Jim Miller wins. I'd be actually really game. I think that'd be an exciting. That'd be a scrap. But he's like running out of guys on the top 10 he can fight. Maybe if Josh Thompson beats Benson, you could, and that the title shot doesn't work out, you go Benson, you'll Thompson, Cerrone. But that's still a while off. I mean, that's in January. I mean, that fight's a while off, and I know he wants to fight. I want him to say 155 too. I don't think him going to 145 is
no.
Like, I want to see him stick here because I think he's so like his weight cuts like probably kind of. I don't know exactly how much he cuts from, but I'm gonna assume they're not like a 5 pounder or like a 10 pounder like Anthony Pettis does.
And Dana said that he's had difficult weight cuts before, so I don't think you go to 145. I don't think that's the right move. I mean, when he's at 155, and he's on, he's one of the best 55ers in the world. The issue is, when he's not, you know, that's where things really, really seem to bite him.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Now, Chris, there are no fights this week. Well, no UFC fights this week. However, I do want to ask you a question. It was announced on the MMA Hour that Jason High will be dropping down to 155. Now, we know you are a Jason High expert, so to speak. Bit of a man crush on him. Chris.
Don't you dare deny that you don't have your MMA crushes, Nicola Gianzi.
So, Chris.
You and Johnny Hendricks.
We will break it down, and I'll let you take the reins for who welcomes Jason High to 155, whether or not this is the right move for his career and anything else.
Well, let's see. I want to see, first off, before we even talk about an opponent, and I have one in mind, I want to say it's an interesting move because he's only at 5'9", he's not nearly, you know, like, I mean, Johnny Hendricks is like a shorter welterweight, but he also is massive and has power and probably cuts a lot more. He cuts a lot of weight.
Cuts from about 225.
I don't know. I think I remember Jason saying he used to cut from about like 190, which isn't, you know, anything too, you know, too massive. And, you know, he said it came off really easy. He might have been even lighter. So I don't really know where he's cutting from. And I do kind of want to know that. And I want to see like how he can lean out. But the height wise, I think it would make a lot of sense for him. You know, it's, For him to, at his age, and it's not even just like he's old either, does it make sense for a guy to kind of be in a weight class where he is so undersized and it's like his, he doesn't seem to be like a guy who's going to like stick around and just fight for forever. I don't think he's going to be a guy who's going to like this, he's the guy maybe, like Eve Edwards, like he's in the wild, but I mean, he's 5'8 on the UFC website. It doesn't have his reach, but, I want to say that at 155, I don't think top 10, like, I don't think you could, I mean, 2 wins in a row is nice, and 170 is a deep weight class, but that would be throwing to the wolves in this, like, that's, I think, even if I think he'd do well, I think that's a little bit too much, so I think maybe someone like Andre Martins, can't remember his first name.
Adriano Martins.
Fought Darren Kirkshank in Brazil, beat him. You give him someone like that, and you kind of see how he does, you kind of see how he holds his own. And that's, you know, borderline top 10. Tiago Tavares would be someone else, like, in that range. You know, someone that's, you know, top 20-ish, but...
they're about the day, too.
Needs... Yeah. I mean, Gleison Tiba would be interesting, too. He's massive. And it has to be a guy that doesn't have, like, needs to be, like, in that top 20 range, but not quite that ready to go, hey, like, you know, I'm ready to fight top 10. He's not quite a contender if he doesn't go down.
So, with that being said, how does he fare? What's your realistic expectations for him at 155?
You know, I think even at 170, I think he has like the right skill set against most to match up really well against a lot of fighters. I think he has the skill set to kind of, with his wrestling and his grappling, even though there's a couple times where Anthony Lapsley was able to kind of reverse him, he does have a really good top game. He's got a really, really nice guillotine choke. I don't know. You know more about the intricacies of that choke than I do, but I thought it looked like he was getting underneath.
He did.
He was coming.
It's hard to finish that one from mount, and you know, really, it's hard if you have any defense whatsoever. It's hard to get a guillotine choke because it's such an obvious move, and it's really one of the first things you learn in jiu-jitsu, how to defend that. And you normally learn how to defend it based on the fact if you don't defend it correctly, you're going to be doing push-ups for a while. So.
That being said, I think there's lightweight's an interesting weight class where it's like very, very deep, but there's a lot of guys outside the top 10 that I think are very beatable. I mean, even looking at the top 10, like, I don't hate him fighting. I think styles wise, like, I think Jim Miller and him would be interesting. I think him and like Pat, he's probably gonna be like, as long as the wake up goes okay, he doesn't look, he can. Like, the speed adjustment, he can adjust properly, which I think he should be able to. Like that Pat Healy range, I don't think is unobtainable. I think he, different skill sets, maybe not as heavy on top, but maybe a little crisper striking, and maybe a little bit better, like, finishing chokes. But, like, styles-wise, like, I look at the top 10, Nate Diaz isn't, like, a horrible styles matchup for him. I mean, bad wrestling, he's got good enough jiu-jitsu to defend off submissions, and there's fights like that, like within the attempt that I don't think he gets to the point where he's, you know, like beating Gilbert Melendez, but I think like he can get to that point where there's like certain matchups on the fringe to the lower end of the top 10 where he can hold his own. So it all depends on that wake up. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, there's like even like with the guy as talented as John Jones, bumping up the heavyweight's going to be, it's like such a transition for him because of the size and the strength of people, and going down is the same thing. But actually, do you think this is one of the rare times in MMA where, I think you can attest to this, people cut weight to, like, Jens Pulver is at 125 now. And people cut weight for the wrong reasons. They're cutting weight to, like, elongate their careers and to, like, try and reinvent themselves. But this is actually one where it's, like, he doesn't necessarily need to, but it kind of makes sense when you look at his stature.
Yeah, this is one of those ones where a lot of people you see cut weight because they can't, they're getting beat at a different weight class, so they drop down a weight. The real reason you need to cut down to a weight is because it's going to serve best for your career. You know, I think a lot of the times people mistake eroding skill sets for being just the smaller fighter, so they want to get back to a size advantage. This is one of those cases where he's coming off two straight wins. He's looked good, and, you know, he just wants to be in a weight class that makes sense for him. It's the same reason I'm going to make the cut to 125, because at 35, I'm completely undersized. You know, there's those times you do it for the right reasons. It makes sense. I think this is the right reason.
The last thing I'll say is that with, I mean, there is a lot of bad weight class, but, like, it also could, like, realistically, Clegg Wade to me is, like, a perfect example of, like, a guy who was chasing a title, can't really get the 155, drops 10 pounds. It actually may have made him, like, less effective as a fighter. I mean, he never was finished at 155, and then Chad Mendes KO'd him.
Yeah, and, I mean, I've seen that guy take a kick square to the face and not blink, so...
There's a lot of different, we don't know until he gets in there and fights someone that's going to push him in that regard. But my early guess is that I think it'd be a good move as long as, like, the weight cut goes okay.
However, that does wrap us up for this week on Octagon Control. As usual, Chris is with me. His Twitter at CWM Writes. He likes to post some stuff. I think I keep it a little more interesting than him, but.
I'm putting up more content, though.
True. As usual, you can find me on Twitter at Nikolai_Gianti. You can check out my writing, MaximumFighting.com. You can check us out next week.
Quick pick. Doug Marshall, Alexander Shlemenko, make a pick.
Oh, please, Shlemenko.
Open early.
Yes. Because Doug Marshall's terrible. Shlemenko ain't nothing special, but...
At least he throws spin and shit.
True. Thank you, Nate Diaz.